I think that they're just being responsible to have secure line communication in case anything happens.
Calling China. Will Beijing pick up the phone? It's Friday, December 17th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, changing climate on Pacific Islands, a vector course against viruses, the business of precious stones and anime, an extradition decision, a loose chunk of the moon. It's all on today's VOA Asia. In this age of digital communication, the traditional telephone remains a crucial tool in preserving world peace. A growing network of crisis-diffusing telephone hotlines between China and other Asian countries is showing Beijing's intent to strengthen those relations, but it does not resolve the wider disputes that could spark conflict. Alexander Vuving, professor at the Daniel K. Inouye Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies in Hawaii, says most acts that anger other countries in disputed waterways seem to be planned rather than sudden.
In actuality, it doesn't really reduce the tension because tension is most of the time deliberate. China and Vietnam also take care to keep the tension below the threshold of an open conflict.
China and Vietnam have each angered the other over the past 7 years by exploring for oil under or near disputed tracts of the South China Sea. Last year, Vietnam protested to China over the sinking of a Vietnamese fishing boat. Jack Nguyen, partner at the business advisory firm Mazars in Ho Chi Minh City, says hotline contact does not guarantee good relations.
I think that they're just being responsible to have secure line communication in case anything happens. That doesn't mean relations are better or worse. I think it's overall stable as it can be.
Beijing claims about 90% of the 3.5 million square kilometer South China Sea, which is prized for fisheries and fossil fuel reserves. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam call parts of the sea their own, and Taiwan claims most of it. China is the most military advanced. Southeast Asian states resent China's landfilling of small islets in the sea for military use and passing vessels through waters that they call their own. China cites historical usage records to back up its claims, including in the exclusive economic zones of other states. Tokyo and Beijing contest parts of the East China Sea, including a chain of uninhabited Japanese-controlled islets. Hotlines are a common solution for China, as Beijing prefers to work directly with countries, including through offers of aid and investment for poorer ones to help ease disputes. Huang Chengting, assistant research fellow with the Institute for National Defense and Security Research in Taipei, says China has other communication channels with Vietnam specifically, including informal talks between ruling communist parties. He says China and Vietnam actually never lacked the need in the past for an intentional setup of a special hotline for handling two-way South China Sea issues, because the platforms used by the communist parties of China and Vietnam, as compared to other Southeast Asian countries' channels, are very numerous. Chinese and Vietnamese Navy chiefs agreed earlier this year to work towards setting up a hotline aimed at reducing risk of conflict over competing claims in the South China Sea. Foreign ministers from the two countries opened their own line in 2012 to discuss sea-related issues as needed. Defense ministers from the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations agreed in 2017 to set up a hotline for what China's state-owned Xinhua news agency calls quick response cooperation in emergency situations, especially in maritime operations. A year later, China and its former World War II rival Japan agreed to establish a hotline to discuss any strife at sea, and another with India following a border standoff. Still, observers say they know of no occasion when the low-cost setups have muted a conflict and believe that China does not pick up its hotlines at crucial moments. We thank Ralph Jennings for picking up the phone and contributing this story. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Rescuers battle strong typhoon lashing southern Philippines. U.S. slaps sanctions on China over Uyghur oppression. Some on Security Council seek public discussion of North Korea rights abuses. Tense one-day trial ends in 9-year sentence for Vietnamese journalist. New Zealand honors heroes of 2019 mosque attack. You'll find all of these stories expanded with videos, texts, and photos, and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and visit us on our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington as we continue with VOA Asia. Hawaii remains a popular U.S. destination for Asian tourists. Residents of the Pacific Island chain are turning to traditional practices for insights on coping with climate change. As Mike O'Sullivan reports from Honolulu, they are seeking inspiration from the past to achieve sustainability in the future.
Rising ocean waters are causing erosion, threatening coastal Hawaiian homes. Oahu, the state's principal island, could lose 40% of its beaches from erosion by 2050, says one study, harming tourism, the largest source of income for the islands. Another problem, higher temperatures are causing erratic precipitation and, in places, drought.
Some rainfall is on average going up over time, some is going down. In Hawaii, we've actually seen drying out.
With less stable weather, the islands are seeing more severe storms and flooding, as in Maui in March. There are other impacts, too.
Groundwater wells near the coast, agriculture, infrastructure.
A modern urban center, Honolulu has paved over waterways to control flooding, blocking natural watersheds that once linked the mountains, wetlands, and coast in a single ecosystem. Native Hawaiians called it Ahupua'a.
And we're standing in front of an Ahupua'a. And the Ahupua'a was the Native Hawaiian system of managing resources from ridge to reef.
Hawaii now imports most of its food, but there are efforts to renew traditional farming and conservation methods, including here on the eastern or windward shore of Oahu. Nick Rapoon works for a nonprofit group that grows traditional staple foods like taro and is restoring this lowland area to its natural state. Other groups are restoring the mountain watershed and an aquaculture pond where Native Hawaiians once raised fish.
We're just trying to do what we know has been done and what we know worked before. We're not reinventing the wheel with these systems. We're just trying to, I guess, revive them.
Alapaki Luke, who teaches Hawaiian language and culture, says taro patches trap silt and control erosion, something Native Hawaiians understood. That traditional wisdom is important, he says.
I'm not about going back 400 or 500 years ago, but we can use the foundation, which you call a kahua, of the Ike, the native tradition, in a modern setting.
Luke says the traditional practices that once supported a population of hundreds of thousands on these islands still have much to teach us. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Honolulu.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, an approach to making vaccines. Happening now in Asia, the Biden administration imposed new sanctions to prevent American companies from selling products to China's Academy of Military Medical Sciences and its 11 research institutes that develop biotechnology. The administration says China uses biotechnology to oppress the Uyghurs. China denies this. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great you're with us today on VOA Asia. More than 5 million people worldwide have had their lives cut short by COVID-19, and the numbers keep rising. The best defense against this virus is a vaccine. VOA's Carol Pearson explains one approach in making a vaccine that has been effective against polio, measles, Ebola, and a host of other viruses.
People can get COVID-19 even though they've been fully vaccinated, but that doesn't mean the vaccine has failed. Those who are fully vaccinated against this virus are so far much less likely to end up in a hospital or on a ventilator.
The goal of vaccination is to reduce the severity of disease in almost all vaccines in use and not to prevent infection entirely.
The oldest method to make a vaccine uses either a live virus that is too weak to reproduce, scientists call it a live attenuated virus, or a dead virus that, because it is dead, can't reproduce, but can still cause an immune response. Polio vaccines have used both dead and weakened live polioviruses with great success. Many countries are now polio-free. In 2021, only 2 children in the entire world contracted the wild poliovirus. 3 COVID-19 vaccines use weakened adenoviruses, benign viruses that cause colds, as their vectors. Vectors are simply delivery systems used to introduce a more dangerous virus, either a weakened live virus or a dead one, or a portion of that virus. The Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine uses a weakened chimpanzee adenovirus that does not infect humans. Sputnik V and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines use weakened human adenoviruses. With all 3 vaccines, scientists remove a gene from the coronavirus's spike protein and put it into the adenoviruses. Once injected, the viruses enter the cells and start to produce the spike protein. Then the body mounts an attack. Remember, the spike protein is only a part of the coronavirus and doesn't cause COVID-19, so there's no danger of getting the illness from the vaccine.
You don't just mount an immune response to the adenovirus, but you also mount the immune response to the protein that it encodes, that spike protein that is part of the virus causing COVID.
The World Health Organization has authorized use of the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, but not Sputnik V. The WHO says it needs more data from the Sputnik trials. Cox says of the 3 vaccines that use an adenovirus, scientists favor the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines.
We know the most about the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines because they have been given to tens of millions, if not 100 million people worldwide. So we know the most about their side effect profiles and their immune responses. We have far less data on the Sputnik vaccine because it has just been used far less frequently, and there are simply fewer international studies that have assessed it.
While some people choose not to get a vaccine, others are willing to travel long distances to get one. Hondurans are willing to cross a river to get the vaccine in neighboring Nicaragua. The pandemic is far from over. Some scientists expect COVID to be with us for 3 to 4 years. And even with the best scientists in the world working on vaccines and treatments, doctors are concerned that as the virus continues to infect unvaccinated people and mutate, at some point, the vaccines we have now won't be able to offer full protection against COVID-19. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Be sure to check out more in this story by seeing and reading it at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken cut short his trip to Southeast Asia after a member of his delegation tested positive for COVID-19. Before canceling meetings in Thailand, the secretary highlighted concerns over the worsening situation in Myanmar. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We have more VOA Asia. A Jaded View of Myanmar, and The Next Generation of Anime Artists are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascao.
Myanmar jade traders are running from junta troops and dodging rebel attacks to sell dwindling volumes of the green gemstone as the billion-dollar industry loses its shine months on from the coup. The Southeast Asian country has been mired in chaos since the February coup, with the military trying to crush widespread democracy protests and the economy in crisis. Fighting around the Pakhant jade mine in northern Kachin State, the largest in the world, has squeezed digging already hampered by the pandemic, cutting supplies of one of the country's most lucrative exports. Myanmar is the world's biggest source of jade, with an industry largely driven by insatiable demand for the translucent gem from neighboring China. Before the coup, 70 to 90% of all jade mined in Pakhant was smuggled to China, without ever entering the formal system in Myanmar, according to Global Witness, jade trader Myo Min Zaw.
The price is going down. The Chinese buyers are making profits like they should. A stone worth 10 lakhs only sells for around 5 lakhs nowadays.
10 lakhs is about $550. For Tandar, who runs a small jade bead workshop across the river from Mandalay, selling her modest wares to local customers has just gotten more dangerous. We worry if we have to go to the market, she said. Armed with a set of pencils and a feather to sweep away eraser dust, Hitomi Tateno is training the next generation of anime artists at a new Netflix-funded academy as global demand for the Japanese genre soars. From runaway box office triumph Demon Slayer to recent Cannes sensation Belle, anime has shaken off its reputation as a geeky subculture, drawing in hordes of new fans during virus lockdowns. But Japan is facing a shortage of skilled animators, in part because most face years of toiling in low-paying jobs to learn the ropes, meaning much of the painstaking frame-by-frame drawing work is outsourced overseas. That's something the U.S. streaming giant thinks it can change with its WIT Animator Academy, which offers a group of junior artists free training and a stipend for living expenses as they learn. George Wada, president of top anime production house WIT Studio, which is running the training with Netflix, compares it to other fast tracks into demanding industries.
I think our program is similar to Sushi Academy. If you become an apprentice with a top sushi chef, it may take years before you master all the recipes. But you can go to a Sushi Academy and finish the whole curriculum in 1 year.
There's no doubt about the growing demand for animators. Netflix says more than 100 million households worldwide watched at least one anime on Netflix in the 12 months to September 2020, a figure that grew 50% year-on-year. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascao.
Making headlines in Asia, former Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad has been admitted to a hospital to receive a full checkup. The 96-year-old has had a history of heart-related illness. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, it's been quite a busy week in the region, and there's one story that we just haven't been able to get to until now. A British court has ruled that Julian Assange, the 50-year-old founder of the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks, can be extradited to the United States to face charges of hacking and theft. As Henry Ridgewell reports, press freedom campaigners are dismayed by the ruling.
The ruling by British High Court judges overturned an earlier court decision in January, blocking Julian Assange's extradition from Britain to the United States. In that earlier decision, Judge Vanessa Baraitza ruled there was a high risk that Assange would commit suicide if held in an American prison. US prosecutors appealed, and the British High Court has ruled in their favour.
Basically, judging that the assurances they gave to the UK that Assange would not be subjected to basically isolation or solitary confinement unless he does something new to merit it, that those were sufficient to address the concerns raised by Vanessa Baritzer about Assange's likelihood to commit suicide in U.S. jails.
U.S. authorities accuse Assange of conspiring to gain access to U.S. military databases containing classified documents that were later published in WikiLeaks. Supporters of Assange reacted with dismay. Assange's fiancée and mother of his child said the U.S. assurances were inherently unreliable.
Join represents the fundamentals of what it means to live in a free society, of what it means to have press freedom, of what it means for journalists to do their jobs without being afraid of spending the rest of their lives in prison.
The ruling now leaves the decision to extradite Assange in the hands of Britain's Home Secretary, Priti Patel. However, defense lawyers can appeal the ruling.
They've also talked about appealing the underlying decision that ruled this did not impinge on journalism. It's unclear whether they're going to do that next. They also could appeal to the European courts.
Recent revelations could be used by the defense in their appeal. A former WikiLeaks insider turned FBI informer has said that he fabricated evidence used by the prosecution. And in September, Yahoo News published a story alleging that the CIA had plotted to kidnap or even kill Assange in 2017. Assange argues the freedom of the press is at stake. In 2010 and 2011, he oversaw the publication by WikiLeaks of hundreds of thousands of diplomatic cables and military reports relating to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which were leaked by former US soldier Chelsea Manning. Assange says the leak exposed abuses by the US military. He faces 18 US federal charges relating to allegations of hacking, theft of classified material, and the disclosure of the identities of U.S. informants, which prosecutors say put their lives at risk.
One of the things Baritzer said in deciding that he was not protected as a journalist is that at the very same time he was soliciting these files from Chelsea Manning and offering to crack a password in doing it, he was also hacking targets in Iceland. He ultimately hacked a WikiLeaks attempted to hack a WikiLeaks dissident. There's a lot in there that WikiLeaks doesn't like to talk about because it has nothing to do with journalism.
Human rights and press freedom groups have strongly condemned the High Court decision. Any appeals must be lodged within the next 2 weeks, but it's possible judges would reject any further hearings on the case. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists from the University of Arizona in Tucson say in a press release that they found evidence a near-Earth asteroid might be a fragment of the moon. The object is described as a quasi-satellite, which means it orbits the sun but remains within a rather close distance to Earth. The asteroid, called Kamu'u-Alawa, was discovered in 2016 by scientists working with the Pan-STARRS Astronomical Survey. The U of A team says it's about 46 to 58 meters in diameter and can get as close as 14.5 million kilometers from Earth. Using the large binocular telescope in southern Arizona, the scientists found the asteroid's spectrum of electromagnetic radiation is the same as lunar rocks gathered by NASA's Apollo moon missions. The researchers say they aren't sure how the object broke away from the moon. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
That's our program for today and for this week. Thanks for joining us for VOA Asia. Continue online. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.